through into the last bit of today's program. We're going to meet Beauty Man in about 25 minutes. Find out more, top musician and comedian. Right now, our business futurist to the stars, Morris Misalowski, joins me on the line from Melbourne. Hello, Morris. Good afternoon.
G'day, Phil.
G'day, mate. Well, today he wants to talk about how we will live, work and educate in the year 2030. First up, interesting stuff, but why those particular digits? Why 2030?
Well, 2030 for me is part of an ongoing series of studies I do. Whenever in Australia, we've just started our school year, so the kids have just gone back. And whenever we start that school year, I always look forward at what the world will look like when those kids will be ready for the workforce, which in Australia is 15 years from now.
Very good. Well, this ties in beautifully with something I was talking with Merrin Pierce about this morning. We're talking about, you know, things like recycling and eco stuff in Hong Kong. Doesn't seem to be working with the current generation. It's just not on the radar. But he reckons a lot of younger people are really into it. So I said, how about we just sit it out for 15 years and everything will take care of itself? Is there a link there?
I think there is, and I think you're right. The stuff you're talking about is something that we, people of my generation anyway, had to learn. And it's something of the younger generation just does and takes for granted. It's the way that they are. You know, I don't know if they're going to be terribly green or if they're going to be as efficient as we want them to be, but the world of doing that to them is ordinary. They're used to recycling. They're used to thinking about the planet. In some ways, they've been brought up with a more with a different view of their place in the planet as well. We talk often about how selfish they might be and how self-absorbed they may be, and that may be true. But beyond that, all the research, all the conversation still says that they see themselves very much as global citizens.
Can we think of a comparison here? So was there something that when you were 10 or 11, you did quite naturally, and your mum and dad, for instance, had a hard time dealing with it? I mean, switching on anything technical maybe, but is there anything that springs to mind?
Well, there is, but I think every generation has it. I mean, I was around slightly after the Beatles, but you know, the Beatles did it for most parents, radio did it, television did it. Every piece of new technology, the previous generation swore that the devil had just come to earth, our brains were going to go to porridge, there was nothing good about it. And so every generation kind of rallies against the stuff that they weren't brought up with. It's not ordinary for them.
I think one of the greatest examples, Morris, has got to be the good old motor car.
Yeah, I mean, that was the devil incarnate in every sense possible. In 1900, and we were still talking, of course, about horse and buggies, very few people owned them, and seeing a motor car on the road was really a very, very strange thing to do. I saw a really interesting doco last week about Britain, and it was part of it was about the way that people used to go to the beach. And it showed... and I don't remember what the title was, but it was a physical wooden wagon that women used to get into, and that wagon would be rolled into the water. And they would swim or walk around inside that wagon with nobody else seeing them, because in those days you couldn't show anything to anybody else of a salacious nature, which would have just been ankles in those days. So
indeed,
haven't we come a long way just for that?
It was called a bathing machine. I've actually seen a few, but only in museums and stuff. The stuff I was on about earlier on was Thomas Edison says to Henry Ford, forget electric cars, it will never take off. And that was from 1896. So I guess it's just human nature that this kind of thing happens.
Well, it is. And then we have to debate whether Edison really invented electricity or whether it was someone else. But anyway, there's a whole different argument that we go down. But you're right, and I think every generation sees that. The biggest difference, I think, between my generations, previous generations, and today's generations, Phil, is that we normally had one, maybe two things that were really big and changing, and they took a while to come in. We talked about generational change in my day, and we meant 25 years. Today, there are so many new things happening, literally day by day, so many competing different ways, new ways, not necessarily better, but just different ways of doing things, that kids are really having their heads spun every minute. And the other big thing is that they live digitally and globally, whereas I lived physically and locally.
That makes a lot of sense. Another thing that makes me consider is, are we spending our time now, are the people you're talking about now, trying to find a way to safely undo some of the things that people like Thomas Edison and Henry Ford did with such gay abandon 100 years plus ago?
The answer is yes. I mean, it has been to me. When you look at a lot of the things that we are evolving now, I often refer to them as devolving. We're going back to earlier times. before we got so hurried, before we became 9-to-5 workers, before all of those things were ordinary. I think social media, in many ways, is really a hearkening back to the village societies that we used to live in, where we used to know everybody, we used to peer over the windows, over the fences, we knew a lot of gossip, and we used to get together. I know it's not a physical manifestation of it, I get that. But I think psychologically, it goes back to those earlier days of we're a tribe, we're a herd mentality.
I think the thing that really fascinates me right now is that the things that defined the 20th century, the massive inventions, as I kind of said before, are the things that people are worried are now killing the world. What an interesting state of affairs, huh?
Absolutely is. I mean, you talk about your electricity, you talk about gas, you talk about the cars that you've spoken about. You can
planes.
Planes. You can go through all of those. And, of course, they've all had an impact on the Earth, on planet and on humans. History often looks back and says these things were bad. Time will tell. But I still come out on the side of what would we have been like? I don't know, better or worse, but what would we have been like if we didn't invent those? I don't know how you have that discussion, but what would we have been like?
Well, let's move forward as we're supposed to be doing here. You did a whole thing about what Australia might be like in 2030, because that's your bag. But generalise a bit for me, Maurice. What are the things that really piqued your attention?
So to me, it's 2030. We've talked before about the notion of the workforce being substantially different. 9-to-5, which in Australia is still the main way that we work, Monday to Friday, will be a secondary way of working. These kids will be into careers and doing tasks that we don't know about today. I've surmised 60% of the work they do, the industries they'll do them in, haven't yet been invented. It talks about a really different landscape as well. It talks about China being a dominant player in that space, and even more interestingly, India's population outstripping China's by 2030.
See, there's one thing here, Maurice, that's very close to people's hearts in Hong Kong. You can't help but speculate. Who's to say that China will be run by the same people it's run by now in the year 2030? Of course, 2047 is the one on Hong Kong people's radars, i.e., will this still be a communist China or will it be something completely different? Never say never.
Well, absolutely, and it is already different. It's just labelled the same, but it's very different to what it was 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago. It constantly evolves. And you're right, by 2030, it will have evolved. Whether the labels have changed, whether it's still seen as something or something else, it's evolving. It's interesting to see that Hong Kong's population will increase also in that time period. You know, at the moment, you've got about 7.3 million people.
And it feels it.
But this is the interesting part for me anyway. By 2030, you're going to go up 14% to about 8.2 million.
There's lots of big infrastructural projects that the government's trying to do here and people are kicking up about it. I'm talking massive stuff, so that kind of ties in with what you're talking about.
Well, these are just straight out demographics. These are provided by you guys, not made up by me. It talks by 2030 that the birth rate will fall, and we're seeing that across the planet. But it also says, which is different from many other countries, and especially Australia, your death rates will increase. So what we're seeing is, and what's predicted is, that it'll be net migration that actually keeps your population increasing and puts people in the workforce.
See, I'm already seeing little spins on this one. It's just my disbelieving nature. But who signed this? Who published this report?
This was from Hong Kong, China, and it's from the Census and Statistics Department.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
So, don't know, but I tend to go to the ones that are centralised by government to find these figures.
And we can. But Maurice, there's one thing here. I mean, it's just because some of us are cynical about this stuff. You know, somebody puts out a study on something, and there's always a reason why it's been paid for and why it's there. I mean, straight up, you're reciting these wonderful figures, but what they're saying to us listening in Hong Kong is justifying all the great big bridges and trains and railways and stuff that the government's so desperately trying to build at the moment.
Yeah, it may do, but to me, it's kind of what we talk about in Australia and everywhere else too, that the population is changing dramatically. I mean, your response is a particular Hong Kong one, and it may suit or may not, but it is the difference in population sizes that we're seeing. It's also the huge middle class that's rising, regardless of where that figure comes from. We see it across the planet. It's just becoming something extraordinary, with each of those having different needs and wants than they had before. You know, the middle class is an extraordinary figure, and across the planet, at the moment, we're somewhere around the 7 billion mark, And when we get to 2030, we're going to be somewhere closer to the 9 billion mark, 9 billion people, that is.
Yeah. Let's take it down from the huge level here, Morris, and back to something you made me curious about. You said there'll be professions that we haven't even heard of. What do you think? It's a bit H.G. Wellsian, this, isn't it?
It is, but look, a lot of those professions we know. The first thing is, as I always say, we should not get into this conversation of everything we know, everything we have now will disappear. There will still be retailers in Hong Kong, we'll still need merchants, we'll still need carpenters. All of those things are still going to be around in 2030. What they do, how they do, where and when they do it will change, but it so has it over the last 20 years, 100 years. So let's not think it's all computerized and technology. Those jobs will exist, but some of moving over to the other side of the equation, we spoke about these kids being used to a digital space, and many of the new jobs and industries will be in that digital space. We know, or I believe anyway, that this virtual reality, augmented reality, which is just starting to rise, will be ordinary by 2030, and there will be lots of new jobs in those spaces. They're not things that most people today would even be aware of or think of as career choices, but they'll be really ordinary by 2030.
It's funny, Maurice, how in different generations, different years in history, there's always been a big thing of what future's going to be. And if we were having this conversation face-to-face, of course, in the 1950s, in the 1930s, we'd have been talking about the big McGiller is space.
Yeah.
To space. We're kind of bored with space now, aren't we?
Well, we are, although it's coming back on the horizon now because a lot of the space is being done by private industry. So we're seeing Musk and others now taking up that mantle. Musk said last week that he was determined by 2025 that we would be landing on Mars.
And you reckon?
I reckon not. But but he reckons, yes. And look, I don't know whether he's serious or not. I certainly don't know him. But what he's doing is putting it back on the agenda and saying it isn't up to governments anymore. It's individuals.
Let's do one of those big speculative jump forward lots of years like you would have done in the 30s in space. What do you think people are talking about now for, say, 50 years' time? Big aspirational thing.
In 50 years? I think that it will be space, but I think it'll be space frontier. I think we will be in space by that stage. I think we'll have hotels, we will have resorts in space. I do think that we will be going into Mars and Moon more regularly, but these are just as we might jump into Hong Kong or Australia or somewhere else. I don't think that we're going to colonize them in any big ways. We also will have a very different world then because artificial intelligence, which again we're just starting to see now, will have had 40 years to think about things that humans weren't capable of thinking. So we will have a different space and a different way to interact with the world.
And how long, Morris, tongue-in-cheek maybe, before humans start to physically devolve? Because we don't need certain things anymore.
Well, that's a really interesting question. There's a question or there's a conversation going around the futurist world. It's been going around for a while, but it's kicked around again in the last 6 months. And that is, what will the human be and what will their purpose be? By the time we get to 2060, if we follow the trajectory we believe, and the conversation goes back to what you said earlier, that if we equate that today, 2016, is the equivalent of 1900s with motor vehicles, and look how far they've come and how dramatically they've changed the world, it moved into logistics, it moved into aeroplanes, changed everything, imagine what we will do over the next 40 or 50 years with our robots, artificial intelligence, and other things that are just beginning to ride today.
Well, Morris, we're going to leave it there, and thanks very much for a bit of an eye-opener. The good news is that there's always a fight in the pub.
Yeah, there is, and we've got lots of time till we get there.